This is an iHeart podcast.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Are they trying to start World War III? We will discuss that tonight. Jeffrey Tucker is going to join us to discuss this RFK stuff, all that, Trump stuff, and more coming up on I'm Right. Let's have a talk about war, because there's a huge story today about missiles and Ukraine and Russia. We'll get to that in a moment, but let's have a talk about war. Not just war in modern America, war on our in our modern era, war historically. War is terrible for those who actually have to fight in it, obviously. War is sometimes necessary. I realize that. Sometimes nations must go to war, tribes must go to war. I get that. But for our purposes, this is really, really important for everyone to understand. War is a gigantic money-making venture. There is huge amounts of money in war. And again, this is not a modern phenomenon. This is not a, well, our military-industrial complex here in America. I mean, yeah, we have one of those. We can discuss that at length. But historically, you can go back Roman times, pre-Roman times. War costs huge amounts of money. Again, if you were in the Assyrian times and you were an Assyrian king and you wanted to go to war, it would involve the exchange of large amounts of currency. You have all these troops. You have to equip them. Where are you going to buy the shields from, the swords? Who's going to design it? You have to feed them. You have to get them to and fro. Back then, it would have been something like horses. Who's going to procure the horses? How much does that cost? Do you go foreign? Do you go domestic? Do you go massive quantities of money change hands whenever there is conflict somewhere? Large conflict involving masses of men moving to and fro, feeding, fighting, everything. War involves the massive exchange of money. This is going to come back to current era, so just stay with me. So in the modern era, let's discuss this, because this is critically important for what the Biden administration is doing now and what's happening on the global stage. In the modern era here in the United States of America, we have what President Eisenhower once called the military-industrial complex. Again, not new to America, but this is what we have here. We have a huge military. It's enormous. As soon as the United States of America decided that we were going to be all over the globe, our military grew right along with that. A lot of this is post-Korea, post-war in the Korea type thing. So our military grew. Remember, everything else aside, that was not America's foreign policy for most of our history. Until about World War I, and even then, really, America's foreign policy, both parties, this wasn't one party this, one party that, but America's foreign policy was not my business. Not my business, not my problem. That was always America's foreign policy. And then we changed that. We decided we were going to be everywhere, so our military grew. Well, with a huge military, you also need a huge defense industry, multiple defense contractors. We could go through a million of them if you would like, Raytheon, Boeing, all these companies, huge companies, that get huge contracts from the government. And so if you're Raytheon, we'll just make it about them for now, but it could be about any of them. If you're Raytheon, you apply for and get, through a variety of means, a $100 billion contract from the Pentagon. And now you have to design and create this weapon system, and the Pentagon is going to pay you. But wait, there's more. There's a benefit in the military side of it as well. You see, in this modern era where our military is completely upside down and disastrous, generals' kids, Admiral's kids, for the most part, they don't die in combat. Oh, I realize the John Kellys of the world lost a son in Semper Fi and God rest his soul. It happens, but it's very, very rare. Today, if you're a commander, you will never really see danger, and neither will anyone in your family. And these generals and admirals, they also benefit from having a war going at all times, because that's how you get your stripes, that's how you get those ribbons and medals, that's how you get promoted. So they want war without end, and especially when they don't have to die. It works out great for them. You see, this is working out great for everyone. It works out great for the defense contractors. It works out great for the commanders who won't die and won't risk anyone dying. But then let's go to the politicians. This is Democrat and Republican, keep in mind. The politicians, it works out so well, because these defense contractors who want this exact same system put into place without end, they understand they need Washington, D.C. Specifically, they need Congress to keep signing off on these huge defense bills, another trillion here, another trillion there, another trillion there, just keep shoveling the taxpayer money out the door. And in return, the defense contractors write huge checks to these politicians so they can continue to get reelected. A huge circle, defense contractor, military politician, defense contractor, military politician without end. And so you, when you think about war, maybe you've experienced it, maybe you have someone in your life who has experienced it. You know it's horrible. Even when it's necessary, it's horrible, awful. The way it shatters nations, families, bodies. I lost a Marine I served with over the weekend, committed suicide. It shatters minds. It's awful. But for the circle, military, politician, defense contractor, there's nothing terrible about it. It's all money and power. And so let's go over to Russia, Ukraine, because that's what's in the news today. Did you know that the Pentagon just failed an $800+ billion audit? They were audited and they could not account for $800 billion. So I brought that up not just to show the corruption and ineptitude at the Pentagon level, but the kind of money we're talking about here. How many times have you picked up the newspaper and read a story about a guy getting killed for $50 outside of a gas station? People will kill you for $50 on this planet. What will people do for $800 billion? Now, again, back to Russia, Ukraine. Pentagon fails a budget. Donald Trump was just elected president. Donald Trump has signaled several times to everybody, several times, that he intends to wrap this up. He said this war is horrible. Ukrainians are dying in freaking droves. Russians are dying in droves. There's all this death. We have to stop this. Now pause for a moment and think about everything I just said about the military and war and defense contractors in that circle. How many people, how many entities are highly, highly, highly invested in this Russia-Ukraine slaughterhouse going on forever? They're not dying. Their sons aren't dying. I don't care about some dead Ukrainians or some Russians. This is money, baby. It's power. They need it to go on forever. And then even once it finally wraps up, once enough people are dead, then they'll make even more money rebuilding Ukraine. This is how it works. It's all money and power to these people. It's not lives. It's not about territory. Now, there's something about fighting proxy wars, which we've been fighting. There's always an understanding. The big powers, they prop up these little powers to fight each other, but the big powers have always understood there are lines you absolutely positively cannot cross. Otherwise, this proxy war might become something that's not so proxy. You understand what I mean? And one of those big lines is you don't launch attacks into their territory. Totally different when you're trying to stop an attack on someone else's territory. You start letting bombs and missiles drop inside someone's border, now this proxy war is about to change. In fact, I would like to point you to President Joe Biden, who basically said the same thing.
The idea that we're going to send in offensive equipment and have planes and tanks and trains going in with American pilots and American crews, just understand, and don't kid yourself, no matter what you all say, that's called World War III, okay? Let's get it straight here, guys.
Today, it was announced that we are allowing Ukraine to fire long-range missiles we provided them inside Russia, inside the borders of Russia. Why in the world would they take such a dangerous, frightening, drastic step at this hour? It's November 18th. You just lost the election. Why would you be doing such a thing? Well, it doesn't take a genius to figure out that the evil, this is demonically evil, because do keep in mind, young men and now women are dying in droves in Ukraine. Russian and Ukrainians, families wiped out. It's freaking awful. Evil, demonic people who run Western governments. Let's talk specifically about ours. They want the cash machine to stay on. They want the money to keep flowing. And they're willing to risk your son and your daughter. That's what World War III is. World War III is your son dying, your daughter dying. The people who run this country are perfectly happy killing your children if it means more money. That is a scary situation. So bow your head and pray tonight. All that may have made you uncomfortable, but I am right. We're going to talk to Josh Hammer about that and some other things in just a moment. Before we do that, let's switch up your cell phone real fast. You don't need Verizon. You don't need AT&T. You don't need T-Mobile. You see, PureTalk is there. That's my cell phone company, PureTalk. They're all about veterans, picking them back up, getting them back on their feet, getting them health care they need, getting them help, getting them. That's what PureTalk cares about. While the others are giving to Black Lives Matter, PureTalk's helping our guys who come home broken. And you'll pay less. They're on the same 5G network, so you don't sacrifice service. This is the patriotic cell phone company. Switch to PureTalk. PureTalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
NBC News released a doozy over the weekend. I just kept reading the report and smiling, and the report was this. DOJ, FBI employees are reportedly scrambling to lawyer up because they are concerned about a reckoning, revenge, ramifications. I don't know what R word we want to put on it, but either way, I'm thrilled. If these evil people are scared, that sounds like a good thing to me. Let's ask Josh about that, though. Joining me now, host of America on Trial, Josh Hammer. Okay, Josh, why in the world would a DOJ employee, an FBI agent, why would these people need to lawyer up? I don't understand what they'd be worried about.
Jesse, I'll tell you exactly what they should be worried about. They should be worried about a possible violation of 18 U.S. Code Section 241, which is legal speak for a conspiracy to deprive fellow American citizens of their constitutional and civil rights. DOJ, really for the past 7.5 to 8 years, I mean, not just including the Biden administration, but frankly, including large swaths of the Trump administration as well, because that was ultimately where a lot of the deep state shenanigans, the internal coup against the Trump presidency, had really started right there at Trump's own DOJ. There have been a lot of people who have probably committed a lot of crimes inside the DOJ, which, oh, by the way, is probably why Donald Trump wants a staunch arch loyalist to be his attorney general of the United States this time around when it comes to Matt Gaetz. You know, there have been so many people in the conservative Republican legal establishment, people who are very credentialed lawyers who have been flipping out that Donald Trump could have the temerity, the chutzpah to pick Matt Gaetz there. But when you understand that basically everything that happened internally against Trump, you know, getting us Bob Mueller and the Russia probe and all that, all of it started internally at the DOJ with the FBI and the intelligence agencies as well there. I think it makes total sense for Donald Trump to want to bring in someone like Matt Gaetz, who is going to put people just like this, the Lisa Strux, the Andy McCain's, people like that. Those people need to be on the defensive. And if that means lawyering up, then good freaking riddance. I love it. I don't really care what R word we use either, retribution, revenge. I just call it justice, frankly. If you have committed a wrong, you should face justice. I don't really care the identity of the individual who's going to be bringing in the hammer of justice, so to speak, unintended. But if that individual takes the form of Matt Gaetz, I'm all for it.
Yeah, I'm all for it as well. Whether he gets confirmed or not is another story, but I am all for it. There's another rumor floating around there, Kash Patel to take over the FBI. I don't know Kash Patel. I hear very good things. But when I saw Andy McCabe go on TV and say this, it got me excited for it.
But in this case, moving forward with a nomination of Kash Patel as FBI director, really, it will provoke, I think, a massive amount of backlash. Now, you know, you could make the argument that that's what he wants. He wants to disrupt. He wants to, you know, provoke the ire of people like me and others who feel strongly about the institution and what it takes to run it faithfully and ethically and legally, none of which I think Kash Patel can do. But we'll have to see. You know, I think at the end of the day, Kash Patel is profoundly incapable of running the FBI. He is absolutely unqualified for that position.
Josh, is he?
Jesse, when someone like Andy McCabe is saying that someone is unqualified, that to me sounds a lot like a huge, basically a merit in that person's favor. Now, look, like you, I don't know Kash Patel personally particularly well. We've interacted a handful of times. We've done a couple of media hits together here and there, whatnot there. But for everything that I gather, all my data points on him suggest that he is just the wrecking ball that an agency like the FBI needs. The FBI is the belly of the beast of the corruption inside the federal government. The FBI was exactly where the Russia collusion delusion was laundered. That goes all the way back to Jim Comey and Christopher Wray there. The FBI has to be gutted, cleaned house. I don't particularly care if you want to take a wrecking ball and demolish the whole thing and start building up some sort of federal law enforcement agency all over again. I mean, if you want to reconstitute it, start putting some new initials there, a new acronym, just get rid of FBI. I don't have a particularly big problem with that. Look, whether or not Kash Patel is up for literally leading a large agency, again, I don't know the guy particularly well there, but what I can tell you is that he has all the right instincts when it comes to the actual raising to the ground that is needed at a federal law enforcement agency like the FBI right now. This is Trump's instincts, I think, at their very best. Again, it's not official. The trigger has not been pulled, but this rumor has been out there for a very long time, basically since the election at this point there. And if he wants to go ahead and do it, again, I would be all for it.
Josh, tell me about this ethics complaint for Matt Gaetz, because I was watching the fight Saturday night, and I was with a bunch of my normie neighbors, and one of them immediately said, well, I'm worried about this ethics complaint. That's all he saw in the news, that there was an ethics complaint on Matt Gaetz. What is this? Is this going to derail him? What's going on with it?
So this has been going on for a long time. I mean, this gets back to the Kevin McCarthy versus Matt Gaetz feud. It involves some sleazy Tallahassee, Florida fellow. So Matt Gaetz, you know, up-and-coming Florida politician, served time in the state legislature in Tallahassee. His father, Don Gaetz, who is now back in the Florida legislature, prominent political family. So this goes back to Matt Gaetz's time in Tallahassee. He had a friend by the name of Joel Greenberg who has since been found guilty of engaging in sex trafficking of at least one underage woman. I don't remember the woman's name. She was 17 years old. The allegations, and they are just allegations, are that Matt Gaetz was involved in either the sex trafficking or the underage sexual activity with women. It is worth noting, Jesse, that the DOJ, the aforementioned DOJ, has looked very closely into this, and they have not filed charges. In fact, that is the reason that the House Ethics Committee has been involved in this entire report, is because the DOJ failed to find sufficient evidence to actually file charges. Therefore, they basically punted to Kevin McCarthy, and the House said, okay, you guys look into it there. This was ultimately the predicate for Matt Gaetz and Kevin McCarthy having their whole standoff, and then that ultimately led to Matt Gaetz becoming the first congressman in U.S. history to successfully oust a Speaker of the United States. Your mileage may vary as to whether or not you like that decision, but it really does show, I think, just how shrewd as a tactician Matt Gaetz is, frankly, if nothing else there. It seems to me like there was a lot of smoke and not a whole lot of fire there. I have not seen a lot of clear evidence that Matt Gaetz has been involved in a lot of these certain activities. I think that there are reasonable complaints that someone can make against Matt Gaetz as Attorney General of the United States, namely the fact that he only practiced law for XYZ years, whatever there. Again, I think it misunderstands what Donald Trump is looking for. He's looking for an arch loyalist who can go in there and clean out the proverbial Augean stables at DOJ. But I think there are still some legitimate reasons to be skeptical of Matt Gaetz. This, in my opinion, Jesse, is not necessarily one of them. And in my opinion, the House Ethics Committee should do the proper thing at this point and deep six this report that they were set to release there. He is no longer in Congress. He's a private citizen at this point, just like me and you. I think it would be a tremendous government overreach to release a report against a private citizen at this point.
Okay, what about Pete Hegseth? You called this pick genius. So did I. Why do you like it?
I love it. This is actually one of my favorite picks Donald Trump has made thus far, actually. I mean, I defer to you, of course, my friend, when it comes to DOD and the military and the recruitment crisis that the military is facing, Army, Navy, Air Force, double-digit recruitment, missing their goal the past few years. They need someone of a younger generation. I mean, you desperately need someone who is not a boomer, who does not come from the Cold War mentality, someone who has been on the front lines of America's post-9/11 wars. Pete Hegseth has won multiple Bronze Stars over in Iraq and Afghanistan. There. He has served his time, but he is also an outsider. He is not a company man. He is not someone who has steadily risen the ranks of the DOD bureaucracy, the overinflated ranks at the Pentagon itself there. He has spoken quite eloquently about the need to totally clean house when it comes to getting rid of all the Mark White rage, Milley garbage, basically getting our young warriors away from Robin DiAngelo and Ibram X. Kendi and getting them back towards George Patton and Douglas MacArthur, the kind of things they should be reading and studying, frankly. Pete Hegseth has spoken quite wonderfully as well about the need to reform the VA when it comes to health care there. He seems to have all the right instincts from what I can tell. You know, people are saying that he's quote unquote not qualified. I mean, what does that even mean? I mean, the guy has served his country honorably in multiple foreign overseas conflicts. Even on the academic credentials that the so-called elites seem to care so much about, dude has Princeton and Harvard degrees. I mean, give me a break. I mean, he's exactly what we need to go in there and to actually get the military to start meeting its recruitment goals again. That means getting morale up. That means getting morale up, instilled in young men and to inspire them to serve their country and ultimately be willing to risk it all, frankly, in service of the country. You need someone of a younger generation there who has actually served in these post-9/11 wars. I think he's the perfect pick, frankly. I hope he gets confirmed. I think he will.
Tell me finally, Josh, about these recess appointments. There's a lot of talk. Is Trump going to get them? Is he not going to get them? One, is he going to get them? Two, what does that mean to people?
So the recess appointments power is a power in the Constitution where if Congress is not currently in session, so if they are out of session and there's a pressing urgency for to his cabinet or a high-ranking political position, then he can take advantage and issue what is known as a recess appointment, which essentially allows you to bypass the traditional advice and consent process whereby the U.S. Senate has to vote both in committee and then up and wide in the entire chamber on a certain cabinet or high-ranking nominee. Now, there's a lot of rumors out there that Donald Trump intends to possibly do this when it comes to Matt Gaetz, maybe Pete Hegseth, RFK, Tulsi Gabbard, some of the quote-unquote more controversial nominees. Now, it's worth emphasizing this is all rumors. We genuinely have no idea whether or not Donald Trump intends to do this. I think it makes a lot more sense to try and put it up to a vote and then see if you want to go from there. Having said that, you have a lot of the so-called norms people, Jesse, a lot of people in the conservative legal establishment, the same folks that I have been fighting against, frankly, since my first year of law school. A lot of those folks are basically wetting their panties when it comes to the idea that Donald Trump could have the temerity to somehow use a power that is clearly vested him in the Constitution if the votes are not there in the Congress. Again, I say put up these nominees to an actual vote first. But if you don't have the votes there in the Senate and there's an actual recess, there's no reason whatsoever not to go for it. Now, if you really want to get in the weeds, there is a legal dispute as to what actually constitutes a valid recess appointment. There's not a whole lot of Supreme Court case law on this. There was one case from 10 years ago called NLRB versus Canning. There was an Antonin Scalia opinion that suggests that is actually a slightly narrower power than you and I are talking about right now. I say, if that's what it comes to, let's do it. Let's tee it up for the courts and see what they say.
Yeah, let's do it. Josh, thank you, my brother. Appreciate it. All right. RFK Jr. is going to be involved, heavily involved. Jeffrey A. Tucker knows RFK Jr. well. What can we expect? Is he just a quack? talk to Jeffrey about that in a moment. Before we talk to him, let me talk to you about going to sleep at night. Sleep can be hard to come by sometimes, right? And so what do? We take something. Everyone has that thing. But I've never been able to take anything to sleep because everything I've ever taken to sleep, oh, it'll put me out. And then I'll sleep for like 15 hours and I'll still wake up and just feel like death, just so tired and groggy. Dream powder from Beam is the only thing I've ever taken to sleep in my life where I wake up in the morning and I feel refreshed and great. And it's a cup of hot chocolate. It's all natural. It's drug-free. It's all natural stuff, melatonin and things like that. It's amazing. Go get some Dream powder from Beam and sleep like a little baby every night and wake up feeling good. That's the best part. Shopbeam.com/Jesse Kelly. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
One of the more interesting developments, at least more interesting developments to me over the past few months, has been the marrying of the Trump RFK Jr. worlds. Now, when I say marrying, I mean this. RFK Jr. appears to be in there. Now, when RFK Jr. dropped out and backed Trump, I was not surprised. No one who knows politics was surprised because Democrats treated him so poorly, like a pariah. Of course, he was going to go to the guy who wasn't trying to destroy his life. So that made sense. That didn't shock me, didn't shock you, didn't shock anybody. But that Trump has really, really apparently leaned on him for a bunch of this Make America Healthy Again stuff and now is giving him a critical role at head of HHS, I'm floored, and I'm thrilled, don't get me wrong, but I'm floored. I'm excited about the whole thing. I bet Jeffrey A. Tucker is joining me now, founder and president of the Brownstone Institute, Mr. Tucker himself. Okay, Jeffrey, could you explain to me how these two went from being here to like this?
Well, you're asking the right question, and it all happened so quickly in the course of, what, 60 mm-hmm. days or something like that? Mm-hmm. So the big picture here is that we've had disparate movements growing really since the end of the Cold War. We had the Tea Party movement, then we had the Occupy Wall Street movement, and then we had the Whole Foods movement, of the sort of crunchy liberals who don't like chemicals in food. Then we had the anti-pharmaceutical power movements that were very skeptical of, you know, the forced injections for their children. Let me think, what else? The Jesse Jackson, you know, style, where's our peace dividend after the end of the Cold War movement? You know, and then you had this migration problem. So there's all this. Oh, and then you had the people who really want free enterprise back, and you know, the anti-regulation crowd and the anti-tax movement. All of these disparate movements out there, but they're all occupied, you know, sort of different sectors, right? And it's like some were on the left, some were on the right, and people were screaming about this and screaming about that. And it was COVID. It was the COVID years where there was a gradual realization that we're kind of all on the same side. You know? we're all fighting the same kind of ruling class establishment that had embedded itself in the administrative state, in these sort of captured agencies that were working very tightly with a corporate system. And once people started talking to each other, and that really happened after the COVID years, when people said, "What the heck was that? Where are my friends?" And our communities were shattered. A lot of people moved, and new groups came together, and they were built of the left and the right, historically understood in those terms, and they all realized at the same time that they had sort of common cause and common enemies. it's funny to me that, you know, these movements have developed separately. Oh, I should add in there the homeschooling movement, right, which was fired up as a result of the lockdowns, and the religious freedom people who were furious about the closure of their churches, and the free speech movement, which has actually been traditionally considered on the sort of civil libertarian left, right? So all and now confronting this censorship beast. So once the enemies all came together with the COVID controls and said, okay, we're your new totalitarian masters. You're essential, you're non-essential, you can't go to the hospital, you take your fourth shot, don't speak, you can't use social media, your business is closed, no, you can't travel. Right? I mean, once all this happened, the full wickedness of the biosecurity technocratic state was on display, and then in our homes telling us, you know, how many people we can have for parties and whether we can have weddings or funerals and that sort of thing. And then that was followed by indescribably weird movements concerning transgender, where people are denying, you know, fundamental points of biology that have been accepted since the beginning of time. That's what brought everybody together. We just realized, look, we've got some kind of strange hegemonic Goliath controlling us, and whatever our differences are, we can work them out, provided we have freedom, you know. And that freedom consists of free speech, health freedom, food freedom, lower taxes, enterprise freedom, freedom of religion, freedom of schooling, and all those movements just suddenly at the same time realized their common interest, and pow, just like it was like 1989 and Eastern Europe. Suddenly it all just kind of came together in such a short period of time, you know, like 45 days, 60 days, something like that. And it united with MAGA. And now we call it MAHA, Doge, and MAGA. Those are the three pieces, and we have the, you know, the five Avengers and all the names we recognize now, and they become folk heroes. But it all just sort of culminated on Tuesday, election day, in November 2024, and it looks for all the world like darn close to a revolutionary situation, where this is not just, it doesn't seem like it's going to be a typical cosmetic change, the Clinton, the Bushes, and the Obamas, and, you know, and so on. It doesn't seem like that at all. It seems like something really foundational and explosive, because all these disparate groups have gotten together and they're creating something entirely new.
You were supportive of RFK Jr. vocally, very early on. So you know the man a lot better than I do, a lot better than most people do. As head of HHS, I know there are a lot of jokes out there about how he's going to fix McDonald's fries and things like that, but as HHS, what is realistic? What can he do? What will he do?
Well, I wish I could answer that. I've never been head of HHS, and I don't know what kind of things he's going to confront, but, you know, what they're counting on, what Vivek and Elon and Tulsi Gabbard and Trump and RFK are all counting on, is that they're going to sort of catch this wave of public support and make foundational structural changes. And if that's true, you've really got to depend on a kind of, I don't know how to put it, but like a sense of demoralization from the incumbent structures that have ruled us for so many decades. And it seems like that might actually be happening. In that case, all the usual barriers might just, in a surprising way, just melt away. I was talking to somebody the other day who said, he said something like, I don't think you understand. The whole of Washington is set up, established, and sort of rigged to stop exactly this kind of revolutionary fervor. The whole system is designed to eat ideals and destroy reformers and domesticate, you know, and house train, you know, anybody who walks into the lair of the centers of power. And I forget now who was that was telling me this, and that, you know, he's very doubtful that anything real can happen. I'm not of that view, just because there are moments in history where things come together. You know, the American Revolution, the French Revolution, 1789. I mean, for that matter, you know, the Russian Revolution and so on. There are revolutionary stages in history. We think because we're an industrialized, you know, advanced superpower with democratic institutions and all these stable administrative state agencies, that can't happen to us, that revolution is impossible here. But I'm not so sure. We're waiting to see. And from what I can tell from listening to these people and talking to the people, they have been working, MAGA in particular, has been working for 4 years to plot this return. They are very aware of what happened in the first term. You know, they've had 4 years to study it, lay out their plans, examine it like Cistercian monks, you know, in solitude, looking at the books and figuring out who the players are and plotting their attack. And now they come together with some extremely smart people in Vivek and Elon and Tulsi and especially RFK, who's written two ferocious, incredible books on the COVID years that are filled with footnotes and make outrageous, you know, shocking claims about what actually happened to us. And nobody's ever taken him to a task for this book. So nobody's ever challenged his footnotes or his claims. And so they know what's going on. And they're spending the next 60 days or so trying to educate the public about what they know and what they're going to do with very detailed, methodical plans for how they're going to get out of it. And I'm persuaded that this is not just the usual rhetoric surrounding a transition. They're really planning major disruptions.
Yeah, they sure seem to be, and I'm excited. I'm excited. Jeffrey, thank you so much, as always. I appreciate you, sir. It does. He really nailed it when he said, it feels totally different than anything I've ever experienced, even from Trump's first term. I mean, you have swamp rats that are going to go in there, and if they change, you know, the Democrat swamp rats and Republican swamp rats, but they all kind of just believe the same things and do the same things. I've never seen anything different, really, until now. And you know me, it's the cynical me, I would tell you, but I am hopeful. Anyway, look, maybe we should be thankful in many ways for the corruption in big pharma and all that stuff, because it's helped us to seek out better things like chalk. It helped us seek out things like chalk. The hardcore anti-communists at chalk who were out there screaming, hey, how about natural supplements? Chalk is not the last place I go. It's the first place I go. When I have something in my life I want improvement on, I go to chalk. And I know you've heard me talk about chalk for a long time. They're running a Black Friday special for the entire month of November. Free $50 product with your first delivery. Massive discount on subscriptions. I take a male vitality stack every day, but they have female vitality stacks and chocolate powder. It's endless. Go get a subscription during the Black Friday special and save some money. Chalk.com/JesseTV. We'll be back.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
There's obviously a lot of soul searching right now going on within the Democratic Party, and that's a good thing. But what I worry about is that in the course of all that soul searching, some Democrats might reach the wrong sweeping conclusions. And there are a lot of issues that fall into that bucket. But one in particular that stuck out to me is transgender rights. Look, reflection is good. But if that were actually an issue at thousands of schools across the country, it would be worthy of a debate. But there are just incredibly few examples of transgender girls playing in youth sports. And when we see those examples, there isn't evidence that these kids are a threat to safety or fairness.
Yeah, first of all, before we get to Dr. Ross, who's awesome, let me just be perfectly clear about this. If there was even one case of a child being legally mutilated by his doctor in this country, it would be a big deal. If there was one case, that's a big, big deal. But it's not only one, of course. They're doing what they always do, and that's lie about it. Joining me now, Dr. Jared Ross, Senior Fellow of Do No Harm. Hey, doctor, Jen Psaki says it's only a few. Is it only a few?
Jesse, thanks so much for having me. It's not a few. They've been saying this for a long time, and that's why we created this database, the Stop the Harm database, to quantify exactly how big this issue was. And what we found is very concerning. Nearly 14,000 children receiving sex change treatments and nearly 6,000 child sex change surgeries.
God have mercy. Okay, where did you dig up this data? How's this data compiled?
So we were able to get access to insurance claims records from a five-year period from 2019 to 2023, and then refined down over 50 billion claims there. Of course, we had no access to any personally identifiable information about these children. We refined that data down looking at transgender diagnoses, and then looked at these cross-sex hormone and puberty blocker prescriptions, and then also looked at these mutilative surgeries that are being performed on innocent children.
Doctor, as you dug into this, I know you didn't have personal information, but did you have the sex of the patient? I am curious, who's most at risk of all this crap?
You know, Jesse, it's a great question. Unfortunately, we see that our data is contaminated. We see that these medical institutions are actually submitting the incorrect gender marker or sex marker for these children sometimes. So we really don't know the biological sex of these children. Sometimes they submit male, sometimes they submit female, even on the same patient ID.
Jeez. You did release a list of the hospitals. Who are the worst offenders?
Yes, so we've got our Dirty Dozen list of children's hospitals. The top of that list is the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, which ironically goes by the abbreviation CHOP. And after that, It's Connecticut Children's and Children's Minnesota. And the full list is on our database website, stoptheharmdatabase.com.
Doctor, these hospitals, at least not all of them, but most of them appear to be in these hardcore blue areas where they're protected, frankly, from the government. What can we do about it? Can we do anything, or do we just have to sit back and watch?
Yeah, we see our top four states as being Oregon, California, New York, and Washington State. And we do know that a lot of states have taken the steps to become sanctuary states, and we've also seen sanctuary cities for children that are struggling with gender identity, the state taking custody of them and providing them these mutilative surgeries and hormones at taxpayer expense. Thankfully, the Supreme Court will be taking up the Scrimeti case next month. That's the case regarding Tennessee's ban on these procedures on minors. And we hope that that will set a nationwide precedence to stop this once and for all.
Are you confident the Trump administration is going to dig into this? Have you heard things that lead you to believe they intend to make some changes here?
You know, we've definitely heard from President-elect Trump that he has plans to tackle this. But I will say that Do No Harm is not a political organization. We're actually working to depoliticize medicine. We're a research and education organization, and we are coming at this from the aspect that the research and the medical evidence behind this just is not there, and that we're doing irreversible harm to these children. And that as physicians and medical providers, we are bound by the Hippocratic Oath, primum non nocere, first do no harm, and we are doing grievous harm to these children.
Doctor, thank you so much. I appreciate it. All right, we have Light in the Mood. Next.
Hey there, I'm Mary Catherine Hamm.
And I'm Carol Markowitz. We've been in political media for a long time.
Long enough to know that it's gotten, well, a little insane.
That's why we started Normally, a podcast for people who are over the hysteria and just want clarity.
We talk about the issues that actually matter to the country without panic, without yelling, and with a healthy dose of humor.
We don't take ourselves too seriously, but we do take the truth seriously.
So if you're into common sense, sanity, and some occasional sass,
you're our kind of people.
Catch new episodes of Normally every Tuesday and Thursday
on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen.
All right, it is time to lighten the mood. And before we get to an amazing lighten the mood, I want to remind you to subscribe to my YouTube channel, youtube.com/JesseKellyDC. We throw some stuff up there you can't get anywhere else. So if you don't know how to do that, just scan that little QR code right there with your phone. It'll take you right there and subscribe to it. Now time for lighten the mood. You know how they normally do the old coin toss to figure out who's going to get the ball first in a football game? Well, I have to applaud this organization, the high school game. They did it in a different way.
Think you'll drop a football? I bet.
That was awesome. I'll see you tomorrow.
You want smart political talk without the meltdowns? We got you.
And I'm Carol Markowitz.
And I'm Mary Catherine Hamm. We've been around the block in media, and we're doing things differently.
Normally is about real conversations. Thoughtful, try to be funny, grounded, and no panic.
We'll keep you informed and entertained without ruining your day.
Join us every Tuesday and Thursday.
Normally, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is an iHeart Podcast.